Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donald on a Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yes, yes, yes. Time of year. Food, 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 gratitude, food, 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 gratitude.
Right. Good job there, Don.
All right.
This is Community Radio. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned, community-focused, since 1974, open daily, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. That's late, in case you need some of those last-minute items, right? Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames, everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
It is time of the year to slide into the holidays, to slide into feasting. Time to gather in the harvest, gather in friends and family, and be thankful for our shared community. There are many gatherings that go on, big gatherings, little gatherings, people that really like each other, people that sort of tolerate their families. But we all sort of do something, or at least think of doing something this time of year. And here is some information about a Thanksgiving celebration here in Ames.
Okay, so we do have an announcement for local Thanksgiving. We had done a show a few weeks ago with Patty Yoder from Food at First, and Food at First does a remarkable thing for Thanksgiving. Patty, would you like to make a little announcement about what you do?
Sure. On Thanksgiving Day at 11:30 to 1:30, we have a fabulous, huge Thanksgiving meal. It is welcome. Anyone is welcome. We call it the community-wide Thanksgiving. And we serve, of course, real turkey, real mashed potatoes,
wow,
and gravy, sweet potatoes, green bean casserole, pumpkin pie, the whole works.
Wow.
And it is wonderful. Last year, we served 650 dinners.
And this is at the
First Christian Church.
First Christian Church at 11:30.
Yes.
On Thanksgiving Day.
Yes.
And what if people want to volunteer to help you in advance?
Yes, please do. We have an online sign-up for this as well. It's on the website now at foodatfirst.com. Click on Thanksgiving Meal. And there is sign-ups the day before because, of course, it takes quite a bit of prep work for such a meal.
Yeah. And 650 people. Are you going to cook for that much this year, too?
We are. Probably a little more.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yes. Now, about 200 of those meals went out the door as far as people came and picked them up. We delivered some.
Oh.
Because, of course, there's no buses on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, that's right.
So transportation is an issue for some people. And so we have volunteers that also use their own vehicles to deliver these meals. So, yes, lots of volunteers needed to help cook and prep and serve and clean up and the whole works.
So this is Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, Food at First, which is at the First Christian Church.
611 Clark.
And that's at 11 to what?
One.
And everybody's welcome, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Good.
Well, thank goodness for you guys on Thanksgiving Day. Thank you, Patty Yoder from Food at First.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen. I'm glad you're gathered around our table. We're a little ahead of Thanksgiving meal yet, but this is the Tuesday.
Oh, but
ahead.
It's definitely planning time.
Time to think. So let's talk about good things to eat, Donna.
Well, I was sort of just gonna, every family or constellation of gathering people have their traditions, right? So I was kind of just going over the basics. Both Lana and I are traveling this year. So I am not responsible for a whole meal, nor is Lana. So I'm only thinking about desserts, frankly. But I did make a sort of fantasy plan. The first question, of course, is always the turkey. Do you brine it? Do you roast it? Do you this? How do you cook your turkey, Lana?
I haven't gotten into brining. I've had some really nice turkeys that are brined, but I've never done that.
It was quite the fashion recently.
It was. I just have... I have a really nice roasting pan, and I
so you do
it
yours in the oven.
In the oven.
Covered or uncovered?
Uncovered mostly, unless it gets too dried out.
Then one can always make a little tent over it of aluminum foil.
Right. How do you do yours, Donna?
Well, I alternate. Depends on what else I'm cooking. But I have my mother's turkey roaster, right, which is older than I am, and it still works. Hallelujah. So I find that, you know, those old roasters and I think the newer ones are a bit more shallow than the older ones. So I have a big old one that has the actual rack that you can lift the whole thing out. And because it's a self-contained unit and if you close the vents, it keeps it really moist. And so I love that machine. You know, I think and I don't usually brine, but I'm very picky about where I get my turkey. I don't use any of these commercially grown ones with the overgrown breasts because they do tend to dry out more.
Yes, let's be thankful for healthy food. So let's have a healthy turkey.
Yeah. So I find if I get a free range or especially a heritage bird, that they don't dry out as much. You don't have to worry about the braising as much, and they always, you know, turkey. It tastes really good. So that's if you get that thing under control. And, of course, I make my stuffing the day before just so it's ready. And I kind of get it out and make it come to room temperature, you know, because you got to start the turkey early. I mean, what time do you like to eat Thanksgiving?
Well, when I was a kid, coming from a German Lutheran family, we'd sit down at noon after church services.
Oh, wowzers.
After church services, right at noon. Well, this is dairy farming country. Anyway.
Well,
so, but
how did you go
I
to
like
church and cook the dinner?
Oh, you get up at the crack of dawn, you put the turkey in, and then you trots off to church and come back. But I like it late. I like 4 o'clock is a nice time.
Yeah, it's nice. Well, first of all, it gives you plenty of time to cook the turkey without getting up at sunrise.
Right. But if you're milking cows, you get up. Anyway, never mind. But so besides turkey, did your family or do you have a history of other meats at Thanksgiving?
No, not really. No. Really, really, really
turkey.
Now, what I like to do, this is not what I grew up with. My mother did traditional bread stuffing. But I do like to put some spicy pork sausage in my stuffing. I like a nice, rich stuffing.
Very good.
The question for me is always, do I stuff it with bread, wild rice, cornbread? I mean, there's so many options.
There is the stuffing question, and this kind of thing gets discussed among families. Yes. I'm married and have a bigger family a broader family to take in, since they are from Arkansas, I learned to make cornbread stuffing, and I sort of like
yippee. That. Yippee! I like it.
Yeah, I like it. So cornbreads, again, make the bread early, make the cornbread early.
Yep.
Let it go stale for a while.
Yeah, let it dry
out.
Much better. Yeah.
The stuffing.
Yeah, I'm in favor of cornbread stuffing. I think last year I made a good cornbread, and when I'm making it for stuffing, I make it really highly seasoned, like lots of extra marjoram, probably some coriander, plenty of pepper. And you want it to be a little salty.
Oh, good idea. Put that right in the...
Yeah,
in the,
just stick it in. Good. Then you can always add more.
More is good. Yes.
More is good.
And I always like to make more than the turkey will hold because I like
turkeys spilling out. And they don't always hold enough anyway.
Oh, not for me.
And then, of course, you might have the vegetarian in the family.
Oh, that's true. You might.
Who won't eat the turkey? Okay.
So eat the stuffing, but not Donna's because she's got your sausage in it.
Well, not always. If I had the vegetarians in the family, I would put the sausage in last and hold some aside for the vegetarian to have their own special dish. Now, do you put nuts in your dressing?
About sometimes, yes. Yeah, nuts are good.
I like either pecans or, of course, chestnuts.
Ah, very good.
Yes,
very good.
Yes.
And if you have little bits of your garden left, unless it's been really, really cold, you may find some sage out there. Be sure to get take a chunk of sage.
Or even brown butter sage. Now, one thing I do with my dressing, I do not put egg in it. I make it really wet from fats or even stock, basically. You know, I've been doing... Have I told you about my pig's foot stock lately?
No. Go ahead.
Well, you know, now that the Story City Locker has the scalder, we can have pig's feet. So I'm still playing around with them, but I have to say one thing they do is if you boil a couple of pig's feet with a bay leaf completely covered for 3 to 4 hours, the stock that comes out of that is so rich. And it's I froze some. And it's surprisingly non-fatty. The richness is coming from the collagen boiling out of the hooves and the gelatin and the da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's like velvet, I have to say. So this year I will be putting, and this is not for the vegetarian, but I would encourage, and were I cooking a turkey this year, there would be pig's foot stock in the dressing.
I'm so glad you are playing around with pig's feet.
Oh, it's
it
fun.
It sounds so much
it's
fun.
So, I mean, you know, at my age, there's not that many culinary interesting things, at least in our, you know, Midwestern tradition that I have not tried. But it's there are a lot of pig's feet I wouldn't want to eat. So the finding a pasture-raised, humanely treated, exotic pig that we're getting here in Iowa, and being able to use all of the unusual bits has just been oodles and oodles of fun.
Oh, good. Well, what else is on your list there for food?
Okay, so you got the stuffing down, and of course, the usual sage, some bay leaves. What else do we put in? Certainly marjoram.
Chunked up bits of celery. I like that.
Oh, celery. Lovage.
Lovage.
Dried my lovage, Lana. Have you dried your lovage?
Yes, I have. That's a good thing to put in. And just chunks of celery that adds to the moisture.
Yes,
too, so
that's true. Do you put fruit in it? Do you put dry apples or?
Apples, perhaps. I don't like to put raisins in because I don't
either.
Like the little things floating around there.
No. Yeah. I'm not a raisin person. But apples, I do. They are a little bit less intense and kind of because they're not dried. They kind of blend in a little bit. So
good.
So there we go with the stuffing. Then, of course, you know, you have so much heavy food, so you do have to be careful that it's not starch, starch, starch. And so I always make a green salad, but I like to use bitter greens because you've really got to cut the heaviness of the meal.
Something to go with gravy.
Yes. And, of course, I put arugula and radicchio, carrots for color. And then I just use a vinegar and olive oil dressing kind of thing.
Do you put these bitter greens, do you, like, sauté them first?
No.
Chop them up and
it's
have
a real
at
salad.
It. Okay.
And herbs, too. You know, even if you throw in, like, a lot of parsley, a lot of dill, which, you know, there is still some of that around. So fresh herbs, greens, and maybe in a base of chopped romaine or something like that. But get those bitter dark greens in there. They're going to make your stomach feel a little bit happier at the end of when you're sitting there at the table going, whoa, I ate too much. Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Well, yes, you're going to want to get through the football games and all that kind of thing, too. So plan ahead, folks. I think bitter greens sound like good.
Yeah, I do, too. And then, of course, you've got to have some vegetables. You know, I suppose green beans are the classic, which is probably why I never do them. What I really like is I have a Brussels sprout recipe. So, you know, you just steam the Brussels sprouts and then you give them a little saute with butter and then you put lemon juice, dill, and a little fresh dill and a little Parmesan. And they just sing with that kind of thing, you know? So that's
Brussels
my green
sprouts.
Vegetable. What do you
I
like
love
to do?
Brussels sprouts.
Well, oh, me too.
Here's the thing. It's a vegetable and it's a salad. I like to do a leek and apple salad.
Oh, good. That's light.
Yeah, it's leek and it's...
So you cook the leeks,
no,
right?
raw leeks.
Really?
Raw leeks, chop, chop, chop.
Wow.
And raw apples, and look for a tart apple. If it's not a tart apple, you add a little lemon juice, and leek, apple, and walnuts. Walnuts, wonderful.
Oh, good idea.
And sour cream.
Now, do you add salt and pepper to
yes,
that?
Yeah, I do. Actually, for those who would like to do it, it is on the Donna Lana Kitchen recipe page at KHOIFM. Go to the Donna Lana Talk page there and find the recipes. Leek and apple salad. That's good. I like that. I like now
that would cut the heaviness of the meal too. Yeah. We need all the lightness we can get.
Well, yeah, it is. It's a good thing. Yeah. What else?
Now the next big conundrum, and this goes by family to family. We're getting into the starches here. Now I have to say that in my family, my mother has this oyster casserole, which we had to have every Thanksgiving and every Christmas, and I really never liked it. Hers was, you crush up the saltine crackers, and you mix it with half and half, and then you put the oysters, you know, the shucked oysters in it, and then you bake it in the oven.
That's it?
Probably some salt, maybe.
Ooh.
I know. But, you know, my father couldn't live without it.
There you go with tradition.
I do not do this. Although while they were still with us, I had to learn to replicate it because
there you go.
It wasn't Thanksgiving without Mama's oyster casserole. I mostly, you know, I really like my potatoes.
Yeah.
Because, of course, we haven't even mentioned the gravy from the turkey, which, let's talk about gravy. Do you do the milk-based gravy or the water-based gravy?
Water-based. Water-based with cornstarch and to thicken.
And from the bottom of, now, if you're using the roaster like I do, you end up with a good, easy way to make the gravy. Yeah. You just lift the turkey out, and while you're getting some traditionally male member of the family carving away, then I just sprinkle flour. Mm-hmm. I sprinkle flour right into the drippings. Mm-hmm. And, so you're making like a roux. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I usually add maybe a little marjoram, some more salt and pepper. Mm-hmm. And then I use 2% milk.
Mm-hmm. You add milk?
I'm from a dairy family.
Well, sure. Now, Mama has had a way of doing this, and I continue this, is putting the cornstarch in a little, of course, a Tupperware container. Where would we be without Tupperware? With a lid, and add a little warm water. Shake that up so you've got a soupy
kind
of stuff.
Yeah, and no lumps then.
And then actually, I don't do it in the roaster. I kind of scrape everything and put everything in a separate little pan on the stove so I have more control. But
why would you use another pan, Lana?
Because I always have
help. That's the way your mother did it.
That's the way my mother did it. Yeah, we did. We drained it off. It works. Gravy is the best part.
Oh, gravy. And I always like lots of gravy.
Lots
of gravy. And I use the 2% milk because, boy, if you use cream, you are asking for it. It's just intense. But now, what is this gravy going to go on? This is such a conundrum because there's sweet potatoes, or do you want mashed potatoes or smashed potatoes? There's all those root vegetables like Yukon Golds mixed with parsnips or rutabaga or
beets.
I mean, there's a lot. Well, I don't know. The beets would make it a really funny color.
It would make it pink.
I would put the beets on the side.
Beets are separate. Okay.
Yeah.
But I just said roasted. So. Yeah. Yes, it depends on your tradition. And again, if you bring something new to the table, that will be the topic of discussion. But no one will go hungry. I love mashed potatoes and gravy.
Well, I've given up these last 2 years, and I do both a sweet potato and a white potato. And sometimes in the white potato, I mix the root, like parsnips, mm-hmm. or something. But come to think of it, sweet potato and putting the parsnips in there might be really interesting also.
That might.
It would cut some of the sweetness of it, but it would still be very rich. Anyway, you've got to have potatoes.
Yes, you do. Potatoes are good. Potatoes are lovely.
Yes.
And if you want to kind of, go to the edge here, push the limits, you could put some roasted garlic in your mashed potatoes.
I made that the other night. You know, I have a good stash of garlic, and it's the simplest thing in the world. You know, I was roasting something else. I was making meatloaf. And so you just, cut into the very tops of the garlic, cut the heads off, and then I just brush a little olive oil on, put them in a pan, and I roasted them. What do you think? 45 minutes, maybe.
Depends on your half an hour. Yeah,
yeah, and we've got these nice big garlics, yeah, I did. I made smashed Yukon Gold potatoes and then squirted two heads of garlic into it. Oh, man, it was good.
That is great. So the potato question. So however you have your potatoes, kind of slide those in. That's good. This is KHOI. How about a waltz? I'll do like a tune you can dance to. And I'm thankful for this band. I'm thankful for this musician. This is a tune written by John Gooden from Contratopia. He lives up in Decorah. A dandy tune. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about fine food for the holidays. Sorry. Speaking of recipes for Thanksgiving, what would Thanksgiving be without cranberries? Cranberries are pretty darn good. I love cranberries. You just have to have it with a Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, the tartness cuts all of that rich.
Yes. And I have a recipe that I've shared before, and it is on the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage. You can go to khoifm.org, find the Donna Lana Kitchen.
And it sounds like a funny recipe,
it is a funny
recipe. But I made it last year, and first of all, it's very, very easy. But more importantly is it's really, really delicious. I'm actually going to make it again this year. I was so pleased with this. So tell us about the recipe.
This is a recipe, horseradish cranberry relish. And those of you who haven't tasted it are kind of cringing, but those things go really well together.
I'm here to testify.
2 cups fresh cranberries, 1 small onion, 1/2 cup sugar, 3/4 cup sour cream, what's not to like, and 2 tablespoons or more to taste a prepared horseradish. I err on the side of more.
Well, here's one thing you have to remember. When you buy prepared horseradish and you first open the jar,
It's strong. But if it's been sitting in the refrigerator, once you open it, the heat of the horseradish starts to dissipate. So if you don't have an absolutely fresh jar, you should use more. And if you have an absolutely fresh jar, be careful. Now, I'm going to make my own horseradish.
Oh, good, good.
I've got a root I'm saving.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to grind it up.
Well, that in there would be good.
So you'll see the steam coming out of my ears and my nose. But.
So you take these ingredients, and then you grind the cranberries and onions raw.
In the food processor? I've forgotten. I did it last.
The food processor is easy. Fold in the other stuff and put the mixture in a covered container and freeze overnight. So do this today or tomorrow, okay? Then 2 hours before you eat it, take it out of the freezer, let it thaw, and on the counter. It should be cool but not mushy. You should be able to kind of stir it up. And then put it in a pretty dish to serve. Don't just kind of slop it down there in a Tupperware. Put it in a pretty dish because it's pink. It's pink.
Yes, it's really pretty. I have some old berry bowls from my Aunt Em that are cut glass with red on them. I always serve the cranberries in that.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, and see, tradition. This recipe originally came from National Public Radio reporter Susan Stanford. She used to read it on the air ages ago as an annual Thanksgiving tradition.
It looks like we're doing that, Lana.
We're passing it on.
This is our second year with this.
Yes.
One.
And I've made this many times, and thanks to Susan Stanberg for sharing this. This is good. It's always a big hit. What do you have to say about cranberries?
Well, you know, we tend to just haul them out at Thanksgiving, but, you know, we have to remember that they're kind of the last fruit of the season. Mm-hmm. And there's so many, many things that you can do with them by way of preserving them. They go very well with – and sometimes I make my cranberry sauce in these manners. Like they make a wonderful orange citrus marmalade.
Oh.
Like if you want to have the Meyer lemons, some grapefruit, some blood oranges and cranberries and make a jelly out of that using the peels, of course. Or even in my cranberry sauce, I often put, I think oranges is a common, orange juice is a common flavor in a cranberry sauce.
Uh-huh.
The other thing that cranberries do really well, I mean, they're so versatile, is to make them like in a chutney. So cook them up with some smoky chili, some onions. I sometimes make a chutney with onions, raisins and cranberries, and a little brown sugar, lots of onions, really important. And then you can put in some savory pepper, of course, mm-hmm. or chilies, I should mm-hmm. say, both. And then, maybe a little marjoram or some more savory herbs.
Now, chutney is not like a cranberry relish. Chutney you cook down?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you keep it in the refrigerator, or you could can it, I suppose, or freeze it.
And it'll taste great all winter long with a little roast chicken or something like that. And then, of course, there are cocktails. Everyone knows you can make cocktails with cranberry juice. So that's particularly fun for a pre-dinner to get the whole family in an agreeable mood. Vodka and cranberry, or we're into gin lately, gin and cranberry. The other things, fruitcakes.
I love fruitcakes.
Yeah. Put some cranberries aside and just kind of boil them up with a little sugar, like a sugar syrup, and then stash them away for after Thanksgiving when you want to. Don't let them smush up. Keep them whole just long enough to cook them down a little bit, and then stick them away for putting in your fruitcake.
Fruitcake has a bad rap, but I think
it's lovely. Well, that's because they're often not well made.
Well, all right. I think they're just fine. They're good with coffee.
Yeah, so be sure to buy extra cranberries while they're in the store now and so nice and fresh. And remember that they're really healthy, too.
Good. At this time of year, we think about being thankful. This is from a CD called Mightier Than the Sword. The musician John McCutcheon, who plays all sorts of wonderful instruments and has been a good spokesman for for Truth and Justice and a lot of wonderful things. He's produced a lot of records, a lot of music.
Records. Oh, dear, our age is showing again.
This is a real, truly live, true live CD. And this CD is based on his interpretations of a lot of different poetry. And he takes the music, or takes the poetry for this piece from the poet Pablo Neruda. Pablo Neruda was born in Chile in 1904. He's one of the most widely translated and passionately loved poets in the world. He's written many, many things. One of his many published volumes are Canto General, Residence on Earth, Elemental Odes, 100 Love Sonnets, and Fully Empowered.
All right, and for all you people in the 20s and 30s in the amorous moods, his love poems are some of the most fabulous probably ever written. I do recommend them.
Pablo Neruda. This is John McCutcheon's interpretation of Pablo Neruda's piece called Ode to Common Things.
Each evening as the sun glows red and all creation tilts toward bed, while food is in the kitchen yet, three things are on my table set: a bowl, a cup, a humble plate. And in that instant as we wait, our bounty's praise we sit and sing, the poorest man, the richest king. These three reminders in my home, how man can turn the earth to stone, water, fire, earth, and wheel, the hand of man, the evening meal, with promise, patience, luck, and heat, as each shall toil, we each shall eat, from cupboard, shelf, to table, grace, everything is in its place. Our bowl, two cupped hands raised in prayers, no other dish with you compares. You fit securely in our palms, for feasting and for begging alms. The first and last we each will use, for soups and grains and steaming stews, puddings, rice, ice creams and tarts. You fill our hands, you fill our hearts. Up the earth rose from its mud, now skin of grape as red as blood. Its curve as soft as woman's hip, I raise it nightly to my lip. Plate is both the sun and moon, rising at my place each noon, the Angelus, the sacrament, and supper when the day is spent. A perfect disc and soapy sink, of these small things I often think, this trinity here at my place, I bow my life and offer grace. I sing an ode to common things, to napkins, razors, balls of string. I sing of fountain pens and chairs, of ribbons in my lover's hair. Of things so simple, small, and good, I might forget them if I would not pause each day and thus attest I am a man uncommonly blessed. Thank you.
was John McCutcheon singing a song called Ode to Common Things, based on a poem by Pablo Neruda. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you are listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Well, that's Tasty Radio for Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. We're going to be talking more about good food for the holidays. Donna gave us some good ideas for kind of thinking of the whole menu
right,
here.
Right, we're constructing the Thanksgiving menu.
Yes, we are.
It does require some advanced planning and a lot of thought, so.
Are we to the sweets yet? I do like
the sweets. Yes, it's desserts. We haven't discussed desserts. Of course, in my family, it was apple pie and pumpkin pie.
That's pretty stiff. I have to, myself, I do have to have pumpkin pie. I do like pumpkin
pie. Oh, yeah. I think everybody does. Now, we've mentioned this every year now, and it is on the website, but I have a recipe for pumpkin cobbler, which I think is a nice, it gives you its exact same flavors, right? Mm-hmm. It gives you a little switch up from another pie crust, and it's very easy to make. And I always use a squash, which I roast myself rather than canned pumpkin. That's just my preferences.
That's a good idea for dessert. That's
good. And it's not a butternut squash. It's a buttercup or a kabocha, the darkest, deepest, reddest, orangiest squash that you can find.
Good. That sounds great. There's a lot of other Donna Lana Kitchen recipes on the website that might be handy. The horseradish cranberry relish recipe is on that website, and there's a pumpkin pie from Provence. There's a ginger snap recipe. There's Grandma Bumgardner's plum pudding. And
we'll save that one for Christmas.
That's Christmas.
But there we
Christmas.
Go. That's my grandmother.
There's a cornbread recipe, a pumpkin soup with chutney. All kinds of good things. So go to the website, khoifm.org, Donna Lana Kitchen. Look for the recipes there.
Now, the other options, lots of people make pecan pies, too.
Oh, I love pecan pies.
Yeah, that's kind of a classic. This year, since I'm an invitee at my son's friend's house, some other parents in Vermont, I think I'm taking all desserts. So I'm going to make something called an apple cider magic cake. Now, I haven't done this yet, folks, and I'm going to describe it to you. But if you want to make it, it's on tastingtable.com, and, you know, you can put in apple cider magic cake. It says you'll never have to eat dry cake again. So basically what it is a cake that bakes up the heaviness of the eggs part sinks to the bottom. So within it, you get a custardy bottom, and then it kind of dries more on the top. And then, here's the part I like. The frosting is cream fraiche, heavy cream, sugar, salt, and a quarter cup of apple cider reduction. So you take 6 cups of apple cider, and then you boil them down till they get thick, 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 like syrup or honey.
6 cups down to how much?
Yeah.
Down to what? Half a cup or a cup?
Whenever it thickens.
Six cups reduced? Oh, that's going to be extremely yummy.
Yeah. So here's what they do is you bake the cake, and then you spread this cream fraiche and whipped cream topping on it.
Oh.
With some of the apple cider in it, and then you drizzle the rest of it around on the cake.
Doesn't
that sound beautiful?
This just is all in one layer?
Yep.
Baked all in one pan?
Yeah, just springform, you know, circular pan. So I'm going to try doing that. That is from tastingtable.com. It's called Apple Cider Magic Cake. Apparently magic cakes, which is this one where they kind of layer out on their own, are quite the rage now. And the apple cider flavor will be perfect for Thanksgiving.
We can all use a little magic.
Absolutely.
I like that one.
The other thing, because, of course, if I'm bringing a dessert, I'm going to have to make something else extraordinary. I'm going to do the chestnut and walnut meringues.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah. Well, basically, it's a meringue recipe which incorporates a small amount of flour, of chestnut flour. So it's like this recipe, which is from Flavor Flowers by Alice Medrich, which I got at the library, at the Ames Public Library. So for 3 egg whites, you incorporate 1/4 cup of chestnut flour, which I think we'll have to find on the internet. I haven't been able to get any here. And then you make your regular meringue-y thing out of it. Bake it, you know, in the usual very low and long oven. And, oh, well, and the walnuts you put in, just before you put them in the oven.
Oh, what? Otherwise, they'd probably all kind of sink.
Right, right. You don't want the walnuts in it while you're beating the egg whites. Although that's the chestnut flour goes in while you're whipping, and then you kind of decorate or put it into the batter, fold it in at the last minute, and then flump it on the tray. Or I'm using my trusty Silpat, which makes everything not stick. So those are the two things I'm going to do this year. I'm freed from the usual obligations, and that's what I'm going to do.
I think it's a good use of your time to make some. Actually, the second recipe.
I want to try something new.
Yeah, the second recipe has a bit of magic to it. I always think meringues are magic.
I do too, and my son loves meringues. He's going to have a nice little surprise.
Oh, that's wonderful. Very good. So after all of this wonderful feasting, you all gather up the dishes and if you have help, do the dishes in a group. That's always fun. And then you just kind of sit around and enjoy.
And don't forget to save the carcass.
Oh, yes.
Got to make stock from it. Waste not, want not.
Important part. I didn't do that until I met this nice woman. It's a good thing I ran into you, Donna. Now I think of all bones as...
Oh, yes.
Bones are
essential.
And the turkey has already been, it's like roasty and toasty, and there's parts and there's joints.
Yeah, and if you don't feel like dealing with the whole thing, just, you know, throw it in the freezer and do it later.
Right.
Just don't throw it away.
No. Making turkey stock for all that soup afterwards is really, really good. I like that a lot. Good. And you'd think you couldn't eat anymore when it came to Thanksgiving dinner. But long about, you know, a couple hours afterwards, maybe go for a walk or whatever, people say, oh, I feel a little peckish here. Well, let's have a little something to eat. There's always desserts to eat, it seems. There's always enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any advice about food safety here? Don't just leave this stuff on the table, folks.
Oh, well, you know, the standard thing is that when a dish arrives at room temperature, because it can be either hotter or colder, but when it gets to room temperature, which is, you know, 60 to 70, you have about 4 hours that it can sit without it being disturbed. So, you know, if it's 4 hours later and it's still sitting out, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you can bundle it all up and put it in the refrigerator. But mm-hmm. I don't worry. If you've made all of this homemade and it's not been sitting in some deli case, putting more age on it and more time on it, then you're really in good shape. You know, just don't worry. And also, it's chilly enough out. Sometimes I just set it all out on the back porch covered, so, of course, the critters don't get into it. But
That's what back porches are
for. Yeah.
I think it's the most handy thing.
Especially this time of year because it's not really freezing. It's really refrigerator temperature.
Good. Make use of that. Good.
Unless, of course, we have another really warm day. You know, if it's in the 40s, you're okay.
Good. So we wish you a healthy, happy, and healthy Thanksgiving.
Lots of gratitude. Gratitude is very good for all of us.
And get out your nice china and a centerpiece of some sort. I mean, this is a celebration.
Oh, yes.
Even if you're just all by yourself. But don't do that. Invite the neighbors in.
Yeah, if you're all by yourself, you can go to Food at First.
Do.
It's a good time to have community.
Yes, that's on Thanksgiving from 11 to 1.
11 to 1 at the, is it the Christian?
First Christian.
First Christian Church.
It's across, from the police station down
right,
there. You
one,
can find it. You can find it. Well, good. We're going to have few more thoughts about the holiday. The world is kind of sleeping, getting a little frosty now, and we're sliding into the winter months. We're sliding into the holidays. We think about what's going on outside and how our gardens are being have been put to bed, and the world sleeps now. Donna and I sort of celebrated by looking at this poem. Let's listen to...
Oh, it's an old one from our childhood.
It is. So enjoy this. Well, when the frost is on the pumpkin, we've heard that phrase every now and then.
Oh, this is certainly something we all grew up with in here, but...
We haven't had frost on pumpkin yet, but it must be coming, so I thought it'd be nice to think about this sort of thing. That actually comes from a poem written by a poet that was born in Indiana in 1849. His name was James Whitcomb Riley.
And I have to say that all grammar school literary textbooks had this poem in the 50s in the U.S. I remember this one well.
It did. James Whitcomb Riley lived from 1849 to 1916, and he was a friend of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow and all that
Who
sort
else
of stuff.
Who else was also in all the anthologies young folks in those days, too.
Yeah, he was a prominent poet, writer. He went on tours and gave readings. He's very popular as a children's poet. Wrote a lot of really nice children's poems, including the poem The Raggedy Man.
And he was known for his, instead of being New England, he was a Midwesterner. And he was a little looser with vernacular language, as you'll see in the poem.
Right. I suppose that it was considered pretty risque at the time. He used...
Yes, not proper English.
Not proper English. He talked like Midwesterns. And this poem is a delight to the eye because actually you probably won't hear it, but it is written in vernacular. Actually, pumpkin is P-U-N-K-I-N apostrophe. And other stuff in here is you have to look at it twice to realize what it is, but it sounds just right. Things like that. Another nice thing about... Not a nice thing about James Whitcomb Riley, but if you look this nice man up, who was a children's poet and a very popular sort of person, well, he evidently had a little problem with the bottle. So his career as a reader of poetry at children's parties was sort of like nipped in the bud really soon because he had a little problem with that sort of thing. But he was a character, people liked him, and he is well remembered as a poet of Midwestern vernacular and as a children's poet, too. Oh, he also wrote the poem Little Orphan Annie. But since this is fall and we're thinking about harvest, and we use this term whether we know where it came from or not, I'm going to read When the Frost is on the Pumpkin by James Whitcomb Riley. When the frost is on the pumpkin and the fodder's in the shock, and you hear the chuck and gobble of the strutting turkey cock and the clacking of the guineas and the clucking of the hens and the roosters, hallelujah, as he tiptoes on the fence. Oh, then's the time a feller is feelin' at his best when the risin' sun to greet him from a night of peaceful rest and he leaves the house bareheaded and goes out to feed the stock when the frost is on the pumpkin and the fodder's in the shock. There's something kind of hearty-like about the atmosphere when the heat of summer's over and the cooling fall is here. Of course we miss the flowers and the blossoms on the trees and the mumble of the hummingbirds and buzzing of the bees, but the air's so appetizing and the landscape through the haze of a crisp and sunny morning of the early autumn days is a picture that no painter has the colorin' to mock when the frost is on the pumpkin and the fodder's in the shock. The husky, rusty rustle of the tussles of the corn and the rasping of the tangled leaves as golden as the morn. The stubble in the furrows, kind of lonesome-like, but still a-preachin' us sermons to us of barns they growed to fill. The straw stack in the medder, and the reaper in the shed, the hosses in their stalls below and the clover overhead. Oh, it sets my heart a-clickin', like the tickin' of the clock when the frost is on the pumpkin and the fodder's in the shock.
Oh, good one, Lana.
So there's a fall poem, an agricultural fall poem. I wonder...
A Midwestern agricultural fall poem.
Should we explain what fodder's in the shock
is? Yes, I think we should.
A shock is...
It's a when you take usually corn, mm-hmm. right, and you make a stand of it and tie them together.
Yeah.
It's a harvesting technique, which we certainly no longer do.
No.
But a shock of corn. You'll see them decoratively at fall harvest
right.
buffets and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's the only place you'll see them. Way before big reaping machines. You just cut off the whole stalk and stack a bunch of them together. Actually, there were bundlers even pulled behind horses.
And that was to dry them out, right?
Dry the corn, mm-hmm. dry the corn in the field. So if you see these old...
It's got, kind of gone the way of haystacks, too.
Yeah, haystack. Yeah. Actually, you can shock wheat and oats, too, mm-hmm, in little mm-hmm. small little lumps. Mm-hmm. So a shock is a way of drying
things.
A bundle. And fodder. Fodder is food for horses and food for animals and, yes, and frost and pumpkin. That's
and the
pumpkin.
Shock is in the fodder.
Yeah, fodder's in the shock.
Oh, the fodder's in the shock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, something like that. You remember it very well from your school days. And that's Frost is on the Pumpkin, a poem by James Whitcomb Riley, and that's pumpkin, P-U-N-K-I-N, apostrophe. Hope you're planning a fine gathering for Thanksgiving. This is good. This is good. I want to remind folks about the Food at First dinner in downtown Ames. You can join folks there on Thanksgiving Day. And as Donna said, save those turkey bones for stock. Have a good time. We're going to go out with a tune also by the band Contratopia. And it's some more good dance music. The tune is called, it's called the Hogwarts Express. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Which leads me to remind folks that this Saturday, after Thanksgiving, Saturday, November 26th, dance down your Thanksgiving dinner with the Central Iowa Barn Dance, the Saturday after Thanksgiving, with the caller, Roger Alexander, and music by Melon Farmer, which is Billy Kearney and friends. Fine dance music. It's a tradition. It is a tradition. People come and dance down their Thanksgiving dinner. Go to centraliowabarndance.org for more information. You'll have plenty of energy after all that good food. We talked about good food today on Donna Lana Kitchen. Have a lovely, lovely holiday. From all of us here at KHOI, and from Donna and me at Donna Lana Kitchen, and from Evan Taylor, our fine engineer, we wish you a happy, happy holiday. Eat good food and enjoy life.